lying issue, the unstated issue, was for HCRC to indeed overrun CCH and be the only game in town, which is virtually a fait accompli at this point. I know that many of Free Radio listeners have read some of the newspaper articles in the paper. I'm a little bit limited in what I can talk about because of my membership on the board of directors of CCH, at least for the next month or so. I fully anticipate that I will not be one of those people selected for as a CCH representative for HCRC. It seems to be that Karen Gillette's, I think, completely unreasonable demands have been slavishly followed by both my board, CCH, and by city council members, Scott Kennedy in particular, who took a I don't know if your listeners have been watching at all, you know, say city council sessions on Channel 72, but one of the things that came up in that city council session is both Scott Kennedy and council member Cynthia Matthews were both extremely sharp with our executive director, Carol Shannon, regarding some issues around the opening of Community House. And they were accusing CCH of not having provided sufficient security and not having made proper provisions for an executive director following July, coming this July 1st. And it's true that CCH does not have sufficient funding to fund something like a $40,000 a year position for an executive director. And because I was just quite surprised to hear these issues brought up. The executive director, of course, is a thorny issue. The city council has mandated CCH that their continuing funding and support from the city council rests on them having an executive director on board, and we're aware of that, and we're doing what we can to provide that. But of course, all along this project, every time we turn around, the city is laying more requirements for the project, and every time they put down a new requirement, the price tag goes up. And what started out way many years ago as a very low income housing project has turned into a truly very expensive project to taxpayers and foundations to provide. And it's one of my main objections about this program is that it's this kind of designed not just to help homeless people get going and get back into the mainstream, is the word that's used, but it seems to treat homeless people like they're a bunch of alcoholics and drug addicts or criminals. And the kinds of restrictions that people who are clients in the community house program, such as that they can't go somewhere at night without permission of the program, you know, they couldn't spend the night away from the program. They can't have any visitors in their room, ever. The clients all have to be single, or, well, you know, couples couldn't be in the program. People with children couldn't be in the program. So we're only talking single adults, but if you're never allowed to have any visitor in your room ever, I guess that means no sex for anyone in any of the clients in Community House, at least not in their rooms. And this just really grinds me. I don't consider homeless people to be criminals. I don't consider homeless people to be drug addicts and alcoholics. Yes, there are criminal homeless people, and there are criminal, and there are alcohol and drug addicted homeless people, but they are not the majority. Those circumstances apply to people who live in homes as well, And it just amounts to just bigotry against homeless people, which I completely oppose. I think that it's truly a mistake on the part of Catherine Byers, who's very publicly stated that she thinks that we need to drop a bunch of CCH members and then we need to recruit more board members. What does this mean, you know? Oh, yeah, that we have to, we've been told a bunch of absolutely nonsensical statements that these board members should, we have to reduce the board because if we merge the two boards together, it would be too large and unmanageable. So they say, okay, well, we'll have to reduce the members to 9 each. So that an 18-member board would be manageable, and from my experience, an 18-member board would be very manageable. But then because of Karen Gillette's demands, at least, not so much her demands. She basically came to her board and she said, those bad people at CCH were saying bad things about me. I don't think I can work with them. And then the HCRC board bent over backwards to figure out a way that they could eliminate any of those critics that Karen Gillette was so concerned about. And so then they came back with this 666 plan. Does that sound like a lucky number to you, 666? That was HCRC board member Don Lane who proposed this 666 solution.
This is the same Don Lane who refused to give information about, he was actually supposed to help open up the board meetings last spring when I was talking to him, and in fact he did no such thing. Lane is a former mayor who worked very, very closely with Karen Gillette on opening the Free Meal Project and has done some positive things in the past. He stood alone briefly supporting an ending to the sleeping ban provisions back in 1989 when it was not fashionable on the city council to do so at all.
Well, the thing about the board members, you know, why would it be wise to reduce the board and then it's also wise to recruit? I mean, that doesn't make any sense unless it means that you want to get rid of some of the board members you've currently got and you want to fill in those board members with different people who you like better. How could anyone come up with any solution or description of this other than that?
Well, in Moscow we call it a purge.
Well, I'm feeling very purged myself and kind of sick to my stomach about this too. You know, I've been faithfully serving the CCH board for 3 years now, and you know, this is basically the end of the road for me. I don't meet Karen Gillette's approval, so here's the door.
Now, do you have problems with Karen Gillette? Otherwise, how would you assess her management generally? Are you pretty much a persistent critic of Karen Gillette? What's your relationship with her?
No, I would say that my relationship with her has been up and down. I've had lucid conversations with Karen about issues. You know, we're both involved with issues revolving around homeless people and services. And so, for instance, Karen Gillette called me when Tama Pearlman died, a formerly homeless woman at age 24, and you know, she called, and I was very appreciative of her for letting me know about Tama, and you know, we both shared some grief on that. I have been critical on two occasions publicly of Karen Gillette. I criticized her for not holding open board meetings, which I consider instrumental to the democratic process. And I've also criticized her. Well, I guess I criticized her also regarding the sleeping ban too. That if she really is an advocate for homeless people, then how could a person who is concerned about the quality of life of homeless people support a law that makes it illegal to sleep at night or illegal to cover up with blankets at night? That's just, Karen Gillette has shown she's more beholden to city council funding providers her cozy relationship with merchants than she is with the actual needs and daily lives of homeless people. So I've been critical with her about that issue. And then I also publicly criticized Karen Gillette in an op-ed that I wrote for the Santa Cruz County Sentinel about the Real Change, Not Spare Change program that the merchants brought out to discourage panhandling. And we were especially upset, myself and homeless representative board member Laura Tucker were just appalled when we saw this program, and the language that was printed on these little cards was bigoted and abusive towards homeless people. There was a lot of misinformation on the cards. And then, much to our shock, Scott Kennedy and Karen Gillette both came out publicly in favor of this program. So I criticized her. The offending line that occurred in the article was, what do the likes of Scott Kennedy and Karen Gillette have in discouraging private charity and homeless people? And that was the, what was printed publicly.
Well, I know that my concern at City Council, perhaps at some point in the future I'll play that tape, although it may become old history by the time I get around to it. The City Council essentially raised issues, and I guess you may have mentioned this earlier, about an executive director and 24-hour security. They raised these issues in the press, Scott Kennedy.
Yeah, 1 week before we're opening our program, he's like raising these issues. The security issue was such a false issue because we had on all of our proposals and presentations, which I hope Scott Kennedy read. Maybe he only read it a week ago, I don't know that. That was on, from August of 97, it was on, August of 97, it was printed that our security at Community House would be a nighttime monitor, which is one of the clients would be paid a small sum to be the monitor between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. at Community House, similar to the monitors that we have in our ISSP program. And there's really no money in the budget for any more extensive security. But 1 week before the opening, here's Scott Kennedy and Cynthia Matthews sharply attacking CCH for providing insufficient security when they knew it all along.
And so, I've got no problem with sharp attacks on CCH. I believe in them myself. I've been attacking this project for years on a number of different bases. It should be said, however, that the timing of these attacks seems to me designed to pressure CCH to accept conditions by Karen Gillette, which essentially I termed in my speech tantrum politics. Karen Gillette already appointed executive director for this new board's over all three projects, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the Emergency Church Program, that is, the Community House Trailers Not Trolls Project, as I termed it, fancy space, actually it's not very fancy, but certainly very costly space, case-managed space, let me just finish this, Becky, people. And finally, the third program, her own Homeless Community Resource Day Center. She had the position, she had the program, so why are Cynthia Matthews and Scott Kennedy suddenly coming up with new conditions to frighten CCH into essentially accepting this deal where your board can be purged, specifically where you can be purged?
Well, you can see by the statements that Scott Kennedy issued after his meeting with the HCRC, where he said, this is not a shotgun merger, and your board is free to merge or not merge, and whatever your conditions you choose, that's your choice. I mean, he said all that, but it's, COA or CYA, cover your ass, because the reality is that the city has been steadily pressuring Citizens Community Homeless to merge, and threatening, I'm not sure, I guess they're threatening to not provide the permits for Community House to open if we don't merge, and that's clearly illegal, and it's really, really a scandal.
Well, not only illegal, but doesn't, I think you've suggested that it's an idle threat. You don't think that the city would actually attempt to sabotage the program after it has put so much money itself and effort, and indeed, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of money and effort into it, simply to kind of pander to the, as I said, the temper tantrums of Karen Gillette, who already had the job, but now wants to make sure she has a job with no critics. Do you think they would actually abandon the project?
No, I don't think that they would, and the reasons being that the city of Santa Cruz garnered quite a bit of federal funding for this project, and they have their eyes on having this be a successful project so that the pipeline is open for more federal funding for other projects down the line. If Community House is not a success, then that could inhibit federal funding in the future. So the city basically has no motivation to block the opening of Community House, and indeed, if they delay it much longer, they could actually cause huge problems in the Community House budget and the functionality of it, and they should know that. I think they're posturing. I think they're threatening. It's successful. I think they fully intimidated many, many board members of CCH. That meeting that I was at on the 28th was very grueling. The chair, the acting chair, Dr. Alan Bayer, was quite abusive in the way he conducted the meeting. When I tried to speak, he tried to shut me down. At one point, he realized that I was making a tape recording of the meeting, and he started screaming at me and ordering me to erase it. And I had the peculiar experience, and this is peculiar for any of your listeners who have been following the show, of being defended by Sentinel reporter Karen Clark, who spoke up and said that I had every legal right to be making a recording and that he was out of line. And so she was, I was able to continue recording, but not without feeling very intimidated and publicly pressured and brutalized. It was, his behavior was really out of line.
Is Dr. Alan Bayer one of the folks who's likely to be on the merged board or not?
Oh, no. He's Dr. Alan Bayer has been saying for months that he wants to leave CCH, that he's done with the organization. And I think the only reason that he's stayed on as long as he has is because of the CCH being in this somewhat coming out of a crisis of, where we had run out of money, and we were getting to the point where we just couldn't even function because of lack of funding. And
maybe Bayer was panicked into attacking you by his fear as chair of the board of being criticized, or possibly of your, or is it simply a tendency that he is wary of your critical comments generally?
He's done this repeatedly. He's the worst chair that we've ever had at CCH in terms of democratic process and his specific treatment of me. Every time I'm speaking, he sort of interrupts me and tells me that they've got a busy agenda and we have to move along and would I get on with it, and just extremely hostile comments that are very out of line. And the Thursday meeting was no exception. There were, two different occasions where he brutalized me in front of the board, and I'm disgusted with the rest of the board. There's, other than Karen Clark, no one stuck up for me. I'm sure I've had other board members privately tell me that they did not approve of the way Dr. Alan Bayer has treated me at these board meetings, but when he does it, there's just silence.
Now, the significance of this, as far as I can see, is not simply that poor Becky here is being abused by other board members. I mean, this could happen anywhere. But that a homeless advocate is being treated abusively by people in positions of power on CCH, and the rest of the board is allowing it to happen, showing an indifference, if not a sympathy, with sort of hostility to kind of grassroots concerns from homeless people, or let's say, I don't know how grassroots, because I'm not sure how much you've been out there in the field surveying homeless needs, but certainly concerns that I consider to be important around homeless issues, and that I think many who are looking over the field will consider important: homeless shelter space, homeless input, homeless membership on these committees, not being bullied by city council, and so forth.
I undoubtedly have more contact with homeless people than any other member of the board of directors of Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I talk to homeless people almost on a daily basis, and many homeless people contact me and with feedback about what's going on, both with our program, with HCRC, and then just homeless issues that they're dealing with in general. I don't know of any other member of the board of directors who has that kind of relationship with homeless people. And indeed, when I was lobbying to reopen the site for a campground called Safe Haven Campground, I had almost 30 homeless people that were participating with that effort. That's in the entire tenure I've been on the board, I haven't seen anything like that. Maybe a little bit around the Homeless Garden Project, but not 30 people.
Sounds like an incoming call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I thought we'd turned off the ringer, but let's do that now. Let's turn off the ringer and put the caller through the ringer. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio. Can you hear us?
Just barely.
Say that again.
Just barely.
Hang on a second. Say that again, caller.
Hey, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, I really don't want to be, man.
Okay, well, let me take you off the air, and we'll stay on the line.
Yeah.
So, while I'm talking to the caller off air, perhaps, Becky, you could tell us a little bit about other things that happened at this meeting. We expected you to be bounced off the board, but I guess you weren't.
I think I've been bounced off. I think that I have been bounced off the board. It's not quite a done deal yet. I feel that it will be resolved when the merger is completed, and which I anticipate happening before June 30th. And at that point, if the new board, if the CCH members from the that are included in the new board are 7 or more, then I will be on that board. But I don't anticipate that. I anticipate that it will be 6 members from CCH, and that that will mean that I will no longer be on the board. And which, you know, again, you know, it's not so much about me or my hurt feelings or anything like that, but it has to do with whether this newly merged board has any room in it for people who are critical thinkers. And that means being able to raise issues that maybe are controversial. It sounds to me like what this new board is going to be a bunch of yes men who will do Karen Gillette's bidding, and that seems to be the way things are headed. And obviously I'm not considered one of the people who would go along with that trip.
Now, is there anything Free Radio listeners can do to affect this situation, or is there anything you want done? I know that you did get some board members, I understand, supported you publicly or privately, but not at the meeting, but they said they were supportive of you, at least that's what I heard. You know, I've always told you, you know, from a devil's advocate point of view, that I thought you were wasting your time on this damn board, that it was a way of siphoning off very good energy. You do video work, that you are out there organizing homeless people, and you're also, of course, most people know this who listen to the show, you're a writer, a regular monthly writer for a newspaper of, what, 19,000 circulation, or is it 35,000? I'm never sure.
I think it's about 30,000 is the circulation street spirit.
Yeah, this is the paper sold by homeless people, talks about civil rights issues, that you've really been active in those matters, and you at the same time have been kind of walking the tightrope here, trying to give input into these homeless services to service providers who seemingly, to say they couldn't care less perhaps isn't so accurate, but they seem to be monumentally unresponsive to real concerns.
Well, you know, I don't think my tenure on the CCH board has been a waste of time, per se. I think it's important that people sit on these boards, and if they don't do anything else, if they just pay attention to what's going on, so stay knowledgeable about how these homeless services are run, how problems are handled, how funding is managed, how staffing occurs, and the politics around it. And you do not know what's going on by reading Karen Clark's articles in the Sentinel. That's not how you're going to get real information about what is going on. And so I've tried for the community to act as a liaison from Citizens Committee for the Homeless and to keep the community informed about what we're doing, whether good, bad, or indifferent. There's so much public funding that goes into these programs, and they do affect so many homeless people's lives that it's important that the workings of these organizations be kept track of. And there's nothing like being on the board and looking over budgets and communiques and everything to really stay on top of it.
So how would you sum up your accomplishments on this board for those who don't know? I mean, you've been on the board since, I guess, 1995, many a moon ago, and you were close friends with original CCH founder Paul Lee, right?
Yeah, Paul Lee is the person who recruited me to be a CCH member. Actually, there's hardly anybody left from the original board. The only members that are still there that were there when I first came on are about to leave. And ironically, if all the people who say they're going to leave, I would be the chair of the organization, having the most seniority. That may be one of these issues that they're trying to preempt, since our bylaws at this point in time, and because of recent board decisions, do place seniority as a condition for in line for the chair. If Alan Bayer stepped down, and the people who said that they're going to leave do follow through and leave, I would be the chair.
Well, your board is going to merge, and so there'll no longer be a separate CCH board with a chair. Has the actual merger been specifically voted on?
Yes, and again, the last two CCH meetings, it was voted on, and CCH has voted to continue with the merger. It's still conditional at this point in time, but I think those conditions are probably going to be met with rapidly, since Catherine Byers is not going to negotiate any more members of CCH. That's my prediction.
So let's then assume that the independent CCH board is history, and that you are also history, though I suppose it's possible they could negotiate. I guess you're telling us if the board is six seats, you will be off. If it has seven, eight, or nine from CCH, the side of it, that is, then perhaps you'll be on, or maybe even surely you'll be on. Is that accurate? There are seven seats, I see. So let's assume that you know, you are bounced off the board. The board's is gone as far as an independent entity. What is the next step for homeless activists concerned with basic issues? And we seemingly suffered a number of setbacks here. One is, of course, the failure of the sleeping ban repeal initiative to make the ballot. Another seems to be although I don't know really how much of a major setback it is, having CCH suborned by Karen Gillette's board, because I've never regarded them as having much independence anyway, in terms of, I guess, they're a bunch of, you know, posturing church people and you know, fundraisers, as distinguished from posturing merchants and sycophants over there at the HCRC board. That's a little strong.
you know, but there is that tendency in the HCRC board to kind of get kissy-kissy with the downtown merchants. What's the next step? What do you recommend?
Well, there are two things. Mostly because of my lobbying, the newly merged board has agreed to hold open meetings. Now, I am concerned that once this new board meets, that they might just simply vote to not have open meetings anymore. We should watch that, and we should pressure city council, HCRC members, or whoever we think might help, that we do want these board meetings to be open to the public, where any member of the public could come and observe how all of these hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars of public funds are being distributed and spent, and how policies that are drafted that affect homeless people. And so I would encourage Free Radio listeners to keep their eye on that particular issue and make sure that the open board meetings continue. And the second issue that I'm concerned about has to do with Community House itself, and that is how homeless people are treated in this program. As I said earlier, I'm concerned about some of the rules of Community House and how those rules treat homeless people as though that they're criminals coming out of jail. And, a curfew, 11 o'clock curfew for adults, that seems just simply because they've been homeless. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Not being able to have phones in their rooms. I mean, though, you can't actually have a private phone conversation if you're a client of Community House. Those things concern me, but we'll see. You know, I mean, these are the rules and everything that are written down in the manual procedures, and I think there should be a grace period where we see how those rules are enacted. It might be that some of them will exist on paper and in reality will be ignored. I certainly hope so. On the other hand, they might be rigidly enforced. And so I would encourage people who are concerned about this to make sure that we exert some pressure that homeless people should not be treated like criminals. Yeah. So those are the two issues. Of course, you know, let me talk a little bit about the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. I don't know if your listeners read the Karen Clark article yet. Well, it wasn't Karen Clark. It said Sentinel staff report. The article in the newspaper bore very, very little resemblance to the press release that we sent to Sentinel. Again, they called it a camping ban instead of sleeping ban, which they had promised us they would never do. The Sentinel went back on their word and again printed the misinformation that our initiative was about repealing the entire camping ban. It never was. They know better. Sentinel is printing that just because they believe that middle-class voters would be opposed to lifting the camping ban, but they might be sympathetic to lifting the sleeping ban. And so the Sentinel doesn't want to educate their readers very much on that issue. We did apply for an El Nino extension, which perhaps some people might consider as just sort of grasping at straws. But I think we have a very good case for that. We're talking about a winter where we had more rain than the city of Santa Cruz has ever had in its entire recorded history. And the period, the six-month period preceding May 28th, when we had to turn in our signatures, we had five times the normal rainfall. And for signature gathering, that means that we had about one-fifth the time to gather signatures. Now you might say, well, we could gather signatures indoors. But the experience of our signature gathers and gathering signatures indoor was very hostile. I mean, we were ordered out of the Santa Cruz Public Library foyer. We were ordered out of the post office. We were ordered out of schools. We were ordered out of churches. We were ordered out of businesses. I myself was threatened with arrest when I was gathering signatures at La Posada, a retirement home on Frederick Street that has 200 elderly residents, 133 registered voters at that address alone. And even though I was there as a guest of a resident and exerting my constitutional right to register voters and gather signatures on this initiative in the public lobby, I was ordered off the premises under threat of arrest. So our signature gatherers experience a great deal of hostility in we were ordered out of the foyer of McHenry Library at the UCSC campus. The El Nino rains had a tremendous effect, and since we were able to gather, by our count, 3,200 valid signatures, we gathered more than that, but when we went through and counted the ones that were valid, 3,200, and we needed 3,800. So had it been a normal winter, we probably would have had our signatures together.
Well, thank you, Becky. I know that you've worked really, probably more than almost anyone else, perhaps David Silva, you together, to get this initiative into a real form that voters could do something where the City Council has refused. I'm about to now put through a brief call to Kate Wells, who is former Cannabis Club attorney. She's got kind of an update for us. Let's see what she's got to say.
Hello.
Hey there, Kate.
Yeah.
Hi. Well, you've been kind of looking, I guess, the Cannabis Club, I call it informally, or Cannabis Users Group, or whatever. What were you guys called?
We were the Cannabis Resource Center.
You've been looking for a way to reopen. I guess that hasn't happened yet because you lack a place to actually be.
That's correct. And the recent federal court ruling upholding the DEA's right to totally obliterate the California law has, of course, made it that much more difficult. Any future landlord of the club would obviously be subject to federal forfeiture laws. So now they have pretty much come at us, the voters, from all directions.
Well, I understand Valerie Corral, who is also operating a kind of a cannabis users group here in Santa Cruz, has also suffered the loss of her nonprofit status.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. That's another nail in the coffin. They've cut off access to the patients, they have, of course, they got to the doctors. The California Medical Association has issued a missive to the doctors in the state of California that they should not recommend that they could be prosecuted for that.
Wow, this is
take their Medicare and Medicaid patients away.
This is new.
As well as their license to prescribe medicine. Even though the California Medical Association came out in favor of marijuana as medicine. We have the feds. Just heartening to see like San Francisco Club close down.
This latest statement by the California Medical Association, this was in the last couple of days?
No, that's been quite some time ago. I just found out about it in the last couple of days.
You also have been in touch with, I guess you've been aware of the situation of Peter Baez, Joan Baez's brother, and one of the directors of the Cannabis Club in San Jose, who, until recently, I thought it had the support of the San Jose City authorities. They'd applied for permits and done all kinds of, bureaucratic involvement and so forth, but now he's under indictment by a grand jury. What's going on there?
This is one of the most outrageous situations I've ever seen. He is absolutely being persecuted by the very people who were calling him the darling just only months ago. They have nailed him to the cross. It is absolutely amazing, including the press and what's coming out in the press about his use of funds to buy a vehicle, for instance. That's absolutely untrue. He kept meticulous books. The money for that for the truck came from his, I think, his uncle, whatever. Any idiot could tell that from just looking at the financial records and the bank records. It's just, of course, they said it was coincidence that all of this happened just after a new chief of police took over. But I think it's quite clear that what happened is this person just came after him with a vendetta. And then, of course, the press picked up what the government had to say. And no one's heard what Peter has to say.
Say that again?
No one has listened to what Peter has to say.
So you've spoken to Peter at some length on this?
I have spoken to Peter, not at length about this, but yes, I have spoken to him and Jesse Garcia. And, they feel betrayed, absolutely betrayed.
What about Peter's clients? I know my suggestion to the your the clients at your club, when people like Jane Kaiser was assaulted by deputies a year ago, I guess mm-hmm. Deputy Fitzgerald, twice took from her her cannabis medicine.
Right.
And I suggested the club all line up at the courthouse metal detector with their cannabis and invite an arrest scene. I guess there was some positive support for that. And there was talk, I know, at Dennis Perone's club of chaining themselves to the premises, but it all kind of ended with a whimper rather than a bang when they closed down that San Francisco club Monday or something. Although there has been talk by D.A. Hallinan and Mayor Willie Brown to reopen some sort of government-sponsored distribution system. Is there a chance of people actually mobilizing to fight this, or are we dealing with a population that is so sick and so vulnerable that they can't really do it?
Well, that's certainly an issue, would be the terminal and very sickly state of the majority of the patients. But there's an even larger thing. I think that, we were all prepared to fight at a state level to uphold this law, and not only the spirit, but not only the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law, which would include providing access to the medication to the patients. This federal decision is, I think Tony Serra described it as an absolutely heartless decision. It's a heavy blow, because now we're fighting the federal government, not just the state government, not just Lundgren. And, I think, been a pretty disheartening thing to happen. So,
what about in Santa Cruz, Kate?
In Santa Cruz, there has been an effort to continue to keep medication flowing to at least those most in need of the medication. And we received a word recently, and I can't tell any sources, that operation was being surveilled, and that there was the threat of...
David Silva, who went to the latest WHAM meeting, said it had been publicly discussed, and that the police were coming in with bogus doctor's recommendations signed by real doctors,
right,
with real phone numbers, but the person at the other end of the line was not a real doctor, but that Valerie Corral, the head of the organization, was sufficiently savvy as to local doctors' phone numbers that she wouldn't buy any of it.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess that even the operation that continued on from the Cannabis Resource Center was being surveilled, and there was, the threat that there would be, if it continued, there would be criminal prosecution. So, know, it's a really sad day for for the voters, and it's like what's happened in Arizona, but to me, at least what they did in Arizona was right up front. You know, the politicians said, hey, you didn't know what you were doing when you voted, so we're going to overturn the law. Here it's been a behind-the-scenes action between the DEA and...
Showing the ominous
Russia.
Power, ominous power of the drug prohibition forces who
ominous.
Have, because of this 20 years of complacence on the part of, well, 30 or 40 years, actually, but certainly since the Nixon era, where there's been huge increasing amounts of money just thrown to police departments,
right.
And the civil liberties erosions, of course, are enormous.
Yeah.
My problem is now I've run out of time, Kate. Is there anything finally
well,
you want
I
to say?
Well, I had one more thing I wanted to say, and that is that I don't know if they'll ever show it again, but if people get a chance, ABC aired a program last week named Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator for the, or the presenter was John Stossel. It was an excellent piece. Should be required watching for every citizen of the United States, as far as I'm concerned. If you get a chance, you can order it on videotape through ABC. And I was actually shocked to see something so
real
on network television.
Well, thank you, Kate Wells. I appreciate your being on the air with us here on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck to all of you, and I'll say I'm, my nickname being the Law Lioness, I'm roaring mad about just about everything right now.
Thank you, Catnip Kate.
Okay. Bye.
And that was indeed Catnip Kate Wells, pro bono attorney, always at the center of, or frequently at the center of many human rights struggles locally, whether it's cannabis, sleeping ban, police abuse, and so forth. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the Sunday, May 31st edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. We're now going to go into the taped segment of our show. Actually, the whole show is supposed to be taped, but you got lucky or unlucky, as the case may be. We were having problems with the equipment, and I happen to still be here. But in the future, I believe the next few shows are going to be taped, and indeed the show may be going on indefinite leave. We're trying to find out, as I told you at the beginning of the show, how many people are listening, whether you're interested in hearing this show, and what's the best format to get this information that comes through the show out to the public in the broadest possible way. And my decision